Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Suji DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Azure Podcast. Today is the 9th of June of 2021, and this is episode 381. Today, we'll be talking about Azure Migrate App Containerization. On Teams with me today, we have Kale, Russell, myself, Cynthia, and our special guest, Bharat Sivaraman. I hope I said his name as close to what his real name is. Before we get into our special guest, we, as usual, have a couple updates to share. Kale, do you want to go first?
Sure. I have three here today. The first one is a post from our CTO, Mark Rusinovich, about the in-data center critical environment infrastructure availability. So that's a lot of words, but it's a really good post on the series that they have here on reliability. And he has a director, Randy Kong, talking about the critical environment infrastructure and how basically some of the work that we do to make sure that these things that, cooling power, all the different things that go into making up a hyperscale data center using both off-the-shelf components as well as, some stuff that we have, how those go together to create a reliable infrastructure. So it's a pretty neat kind of geeky post to work through there. And I thought it was really interesting about how we build Azure. The second one I had was around, we were joking before the podcast, is about fire. And in fire context, this is around the healthcare. Fire stands for Fast Healthcare Interoperability Resource. But essentially what it is a protocol that's used in healthcare a lot. And essentially, we've enhanced some of the features that we have. We have an Azure API for Fire, and we have some new features in there that support the protocol. And there's different versions. I guess HL7 is one of the protocol versions, and it has specific kind of features inside of it. The idea is to basically enable, these are some of the standards and requirements that are coming forward from the government and whatnot on how healthcare records are handled, how data is transferred, those kind of things. So this is all kind of playing into that and what we're doing in that space. And then the last one I had was around VDI, which is the Azure Virtual Desktop Infrastructure. And it's a pretty nice post from one of the PMs about, when we had COVID happen, this global pandemic, obviously there's a need for people to work remotely or in a hybrid workforce. And obviously something like virtual desktops where you can log into your desktop even though you're not in the office made a lot of sense. And essentially out of that, some new capabilities came to our VDI platform, some things around Azure AD, different management things for multiple sessions and quick start. So there's a bunch of different things that have kind of evolved out of that is the point. And if you're into virtual desktop infrastructure, you should take a look at that post.
Thank you. Russell, anything from you?
Yeah, well, just on the back of that, people will have known that as Windows Virtual Desktop, and WVD was a very common phrase over the last 12 months. It's now been renamed as Azure Virtual Desktop. So if you're doing Google searches and stuff or Bing searches for that, then search for Azure Virtual Desktop instead. Before I do insert that. And the only other thing for me, really, it's not an update per se, but just to share an experience that I had this week, because I had to renew one of my associate developer certificates for Azure development. And the process was just so easy and straightforward. I was just blown away. It took like 25, 30 minutes, online test. You get the results there and then just really good. I was feeling a little bit apprehensive about it because my technical skills have gone a little bit rusty, but I did a little bit of genning up on some of the newer features around Cosmos DB and so on and passed first time. So I'm really pleased. But just to share that the fact that, if you were put off from trying it, go ahead and do it. Just don't delay. Go and give it a go. It's really easy.
And it's awesome that there's like little learn modules about what you're going to be tested on. And you can go through them, or if you know all of them already, you can just go ahead and take the test.
So I've got time to do some more now as well. So I'll be scheduling some more in the next couple of weeks.
Awesome. Well, now over to our special guest, Bharat. Can you introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us what you do at Microsoft?
Hello, everyone. My name is Bharat Sivaraman. I'm a principal product manager lead in the Azure Migrate product group within Azure. Within the Azure Migrate team, we're all about building tools to help our customers adopt Azure and migrate onto Azure. We have a gamut of tools spanning things that you need to help you plan your migrations better, as well as execute your migration into Azure for a variety of target options in Azure, including servers and databases. And more recently, we've come out with this new tool called the Azure Migrate App Containerization Tool, which tries and simplifies the process of helping you containerize a certain applications that you may have in your application portfolio and adopt Azure Kubernetes service. So I'm excited to be on the show and to be able to talk a little bit more about Azure Migrate and our new app containerization tool.
What are some characteristics of apps that can be containerized versus ones that you kind of just have to lift and shift given the monolithic nature of the application?
Yeah, great question. I think it all comes back to what is the outcome that you want to accomplish through the process of moving an application into a container and running it on some kind of a container platform, right? So what we started seeing, obviously, the popularity of containers started with its application to in a lot of ways to the large scale distributed applications, right? So it let you kind of go with the microservices model, scale your application better. Cut out noisy neighbor problems, better security, etc. That's kind of where the popularity started, obviously, with especially with the orchestrator pieces like Kubernetes coming in. What we're beginning to see a lot more now is with some customers getting comfortable with using Kubernetes as their infrastructure management layer to run a lot of their applications. They are also evaluating moving other applications that they currently have to a containerized version running it on a container platform. And now again, there's multiple ways in which you could do that. You could take an application and go through a process of potentially rewriting the application, in almost completely rewriting the application to better suit paradigms that you would find associated with more modern programming constructs, and then move them. But what we're also seeing is there are certain class of applications where the application, you could potentially transform it or in a lot of ways reshape it and run it as containers without necessarily having to rewrite the entire application. Now, that doesn't mean that you take an application that's monolithic and magically convert it to microservices, right? Because I think what we're also finding is a lot of customers don't find value in doing it, right? Certain apps don't need that kind of, don't need that particular approach. And the reality of it is for a lot of these applications, you don't actually have to rewrite them or break them up into smaller units, right? They're sufficiently, while they may be monolithic in nature, they are sufficiently isolated in some sense for you to be able to take it as is and run them as containers. So that's actually the sweet spot that we are targeting with this particular tool. We do understand that for a certain class of applications, you may want to invest in rewriting the application, breaking it up into discrete components or microservices, running them. But there's a certain class of applications where you could actually get to that destination faster and still start reaping a lot of the benefits of being able to do that, right? Especially when you're getting familiar or when you're more comfortable with the orchestration platform. And you're standardizing that as your infrastructure platform in a lot of ways, right? So you get the benefits of better infrastructure consolidation, more consistent management across your entire application portfolio. And that's really the sweet spot that we are kind of targeting with this particular tool. So that's kind of what I meant with a certain kind of application. It's not necessarily for all applications or for all use cases, but it does map to that one sweet spot in your application portfolio that we're seeing with a lot of our enterprise customers tends to be a fair percentage of their overall application portfolio, right? So so that's really the approach with the app containerization tool, and you will see it in the manner in which it works as well.
And then just from a user perspective, what does this look like? Is there like an Azure Migrate service within the Azure portal, or how do I migrate into a container?
Yeah, so there is an Azure Migrate experience in the Azure portal, and Azure Migrate really is a hub I mean, we position it and build it as a hub for all of your migration requirements into Azure. So that's kind of what I was talking about initially in terms of us having tools and capabilities that span the entire gamut of various migration styles. So when you go into Azure Migrate, you will see that it is organized around the scenario that you want to accomplish in terms of migration. So oftentimes you see customers, a lot of customers will obviously choose a variety of different approaches when they kind of move their entire application portfolio, right? So it's never going to be one size fits all. So a lot of times we've seen customers want to use the fastest, least friction way is to lift and shift servers, right? As is, don't change things up. You can move it into Azure and you can straight away start reaping a lot of benefits, right? It may not be your end state, but it may be a transient state because there is more, definitely a lot more investment needed for you to kind of take it, take an application, potentially rewrite it, and do all of that good stuff that you want to eventually take it to. But it doesn't have to be a binary move from point A to point B, right? You could take it along multiple steps of the way, which is a strategy we've typically seen happen with a lot of the lift and shift style migrations. So in the question on the Azure Migrate experience, it is an Azure service with a full-fledged experience within the Azure portal, as well as other Azure management services across REST API, PowerShell, et cetera. When you go into the portal experience, you will see the pages organized around various migration goals that you may want to accomplish. And within each goal, you'll find a collection of tools to help you through both the planning phase as well as the execution phase of the migration. With the app containerization tool, currently we're targeting a certain class of applications. Currently, it supports helping you containerize .NET applications, .NET web applications that you may be running on Windows, as well as Java web applications that you may be running on an Apache Tomcat server on Linux. So those are the two application patterns that the tool is currently catering to. The app containerizing tool has a piece of its experience in the Azure portal, but there's also a salient piece of the experience which lives within a utility that you will download from the Azure portal and run closer to your environment where you're hosting the apps that you're looking to containerize.
Yeah, along with that, I had a deeper question on that. So like we've been talking about containerization. So obviously something needs to create the container image. Does this tool, so for instance, if I had a simple, let's take a simple case, like I just have a simple ASP.NET web application, as you mentioned, can I use this tool and it will like walk me through creating the container image as well as, you know, the stuff that happens with AKS or something like that up in the cloud?
Absolutely. That's exactly what the tool does. I mean, so there is a certain pattern or a certain process to be followed when you take an application as such and containerize it. And what the tool tries to do is it takes a templatized process and gives you a guided wizard that helps you kind of, it automates a lot of the steps, but it also kind of gives you that guided experience that helps you go through those steps and perform it, right? So it starts out by discovering the application. The tool works by not looking at the code base or starting out with the application code base, because what we've also found is a lot of the applications that is a candidate for this style of migration are applications that may have been written 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago. And the people who build the application may not be around, right? So they don't actually, it is what I like to call keep the lights on in a lot of ways, the application category, right? So the approach we've taken is, as opposed to starting out with your code base, the more the asset that is kind of the source of truth is a server where the application is currently running, right? So we start out by connecting to the server, trying to inspect the application, understand its components, discover that, and then present that option to the user, right? So once that is done, we will create a recipe for how can you take that application that you're currently hosting on a server and move it to a container image. So that basically means identifying the correct base image that you can use for your container image, identifying the components of the application, really the application, being able to separate out the application binaries, the static files, the configuration, and maybe state that may reside oftentimes together on the server, right? So you don't want to transfer state into your container image. So the tool will kind of help you through some of that process, right? So if we detect, like, for example, a database connection string in one of the application configuration files, in the process of containerizing it, what we'll also let you do is we'll let you parameterize it. In fact, we'll do some of that automatically, right? So that application config, which currently resides on the server, is no longer something that's going to be a static part of the container image. Instead, you externalize it to a config that you can specify at deployment time. What we do take is the application content, layer it over the base image that we may have chosen. For example, we may choose the .NET full framework base image, and then layer the application contents on top of it. But in the process, we will help you parameterize the application config. If they state, we'll even help you move it to a persistent volume. We'll generate a suggested Docker file to help you build that container image that you can review. You can customize further based on your requirements and then put it through the build process, right? So it really is that step-by-step process, but that that we kind of guide you through. So it starts with discovery, building the container image, pushing it to your container registry, and then getting it deployed to validate it. But the other thing that we also made sure that we do is at every step along the way, all of these artifacts that we're generating, you can download it and you can use it for your day-to operations, right? Once you're done with the initial deployment, you probably want to customize it or make updates tomorrow. So you'll be able to reuse these artifacts, in fact, plug it into your CI/CD pipelines, and then use it for your day-to operations as well.
Yeah, one follow-up to that, then, too. I assume that, so for instance, if I had a .NET web application that's using maybe a SQL database behind the scenes, in that case, will it try to, like, containerize SQL, or will it be like, hey, you know, one thing you could use here is Azure SQL, right? You could use, like, the PaaS version or something. Does it help people, like, discover that stuff you might not be familiar with, like, the whole lot of ways that we can run databases in Azure, you know?
Absolutely. So we've got that in Azure Migrate. It's not part of the app containerization tool, but it's the step that precedes the actual migration. So there is the assessment capabilities that we have within Azure Migrate, where you'd run this discovery process that we just spoke about at a scale, at larger scale across your entire application portfolio. And what that does is it's got capabilities such as being able to inventory what you're running on each of these servers, being able to look at dependencies between servers, which components are talking to which server or which process on a server is talking to processes on other servers, right? So help you build out those clusters of dependencies. If it finds a SQL database, it'll actually tell you that, hey, as you consider migrating into Azure, of course, you could throw it into virtual machine, but you could also consider running it on Azure SQL or Azure SQL Managed Instance. In fact, we'll even run an assessment to tell you how easy or how hard it is going to be for you to migrate that database into Azure SQL. Are there configurations that are maybe not compatible as with the Azure PaaS options that you may need to remediate before you perform that migration? And we'll also tell you what the cost of running that in Azure is, right? So all of that happens in the planning phase. When you get into the execution phase, specifically pertaining to this app containerization piece that we've been talking about, if you choose to take your app tier or the and move that to a container, that's what we'll kind of help you do. We don't actually even suggest, and we've taken a kind of opinionated stand there. We don't believe you should be, we don't believe you should be running databases, but we're not certainly looking to assist running a database in a containerized form factor. So what we try and do instead is when we detect that application, as we suggest containerizing it, we will also detect if in the application config we find that there is a database connection string, we'll be able to tell the user, hey, you know what, here's a database connection string. You don't want to put this application config file into your container image, right? Because that means every time your database changes, you're going to have to rebuild the container image. So what we help them do instead is as you're building that container image, we'll move that particular config out and make that something that you can specify at runtime, either through a Kubernetes secret or very soon through a key vault secret, right? So that's kind of like the process that we follow across the gamut.
This is a really great overview, thank you. And you know, you're putting so much detail in here as well. You're crossing off all my questions before I'm getting to ask them as well, which is great. But the couple of things I just had to ask. One is, does the source application and the workload need to be taken offline to run the migration tool?
No, the source application doesn't have to be taken online. You could keep running it. We do connect up to that server and for the discovery process, but there is no manipulation of the application that's happening. So in fact, you do need to keep the source application running. You could keep it available on the network. Your clients, the application clients, can continue to connect, and the application will continue to work. So it is an online process.
Okay, thanks. And the second thing is, you've talked about all the good things that it does do. What are the common things that it can't do where you need to do some manual adjustment afterwards? I mean, I remember things like people used to build solutions that relied on sticky sessions and stuff like that. Are there issues around that kind of thing still that you need to resolve?
Yeah, for sure. I think the tool is kind of catered to work for certain common application patterns, but it works for a simple application that is pretty prevalent. more prevalent than you'd imagine, it just works, right? You don't really need to do a lot of customizations. But there's definitely, I think, you will definitely find certain application patterns where it doesn't just work. Sticky sessions, I think you kind of brought up. We've also seen if there are dependencies between application components, such as message queues or MSMQ in the Windows world, right? Or those are things that you might need to do a little extra to kind of cater to. What we've done is we've kind of built customization along every way of the process, but there are some things that we'll detect and automatically remediate, but there are some things that you will need to kind of bring in your understanding of the application architecture and potentially do a few extra things to kind of remediate, right? So we'll help you, the automation will help you with a lot of the parts, but there's going to definitely be some parts that you may have to do a little extra work to get it to work.
Got it. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's understandable because nobody builds applications the same everywhere, right? So is there an FAQ about those kind of common things that you need to look out for at all? Is there some guidance somewhere?
Yeah, I think as we kind of putting this out, I think currently the guidance is, I mean, in terms of if you look at our public documentation, it kind of talks about the scenarios where it works just well, right? So now obviously I think there's a range of scenarios which we are discovering, right? And as we discover, we kind of enhance. But the reason why we don't cater to it today is because we don't know what else exists out there, right? So I think we're kind of enhancing. This is just gone preview. As our knowledge base of that expands, we are enhancing our documentation, kind of also suggest what are the things that potentially you need to do additional things to kind of cater to, right? So for example, some things that we're working on right now is, okay, you got the application containerized and moved over, but of course you already had your monitoring systems, right? You were running, especially with the Windows applications. The Kubernetes way of how you may monitor your Linux-based applications may not just extend as easily for Windows, right? So there are a few extra things that you might have to do, right? So what are the things that you can do to help you monitor those applications better? So those are the kind of things that we're kind of adding guidance for currently. And in course of time, we'd like to automate that as well.
I'm curious, I know you just mentioned this is in preview, but are there plans to support other types of application in the future, or what are some things we can look forward to?
Yeah, there's definitely plans to support other kinds of applications in the future. I can't divulge too many details in terms of the kind of applications that we are targeting. But I can tell you that obviously Java is a very popular framework that we're seeing a lot of asks around. So we've catered to a certain class of Java applications, web apps that you're running on Tomcat servers. There is a whole host of other very, very common deployment patterns that we find with Java applications in enterprise. So without getting into too much details on what those are, I'll leave that to your imagination. The other thing that we're also doing is we kind of taking this templatized process and kind of coming up with a somewhat generic approach of being able to apply this to any workload that you're running on Linux, right? So kind of give you like a constructor's tool where you need to kind of bring in a little bit more of your understanding of the application. But with that understanding, you'll be able to use a lot of the automation to accelerate the process through which you can actually containerize and test your application, right? So that's about the extent to which I'm kind of willing to divulge what we're working on right now. But there's definitely work on that front that you'll see very soon.
Yeah, to follow on to that, and again, if you can't say, it's okay. But I was wondering, like, is any of this open sourced? This feels like something where, like, we can't predict, to Russell's point, how everybody's going to run their applications and, like, what frameworks there are. Obviously, there's, like, certain popular ones. But, like, is there an idea about maybe even open sourcing pieces of this to let people, you know, as you put, customize it or add their own, like, hey, there's this really popular web framework that's going on out there, and I want to contribute that back to Microsoft, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the way we're kind of doing it in phases. I think what we're doing right now is even within Microsoft, I think it should come as no surprise, right? There are various engineering groups kind of working on different areas with specialization with certain application types, right? So I think the first thing that we're kind of trying to do is how do you kind of democratize that process of templatizing a certain application pattern and augmenting the tool to kind of cater to that for within groups in Microsoft itself. The other thing that we're doing is I spoke about the various customizations that you have along the way, right, where you can kind of take what the tool is discovering and kind of augment it with information that you have available to you, right? So we're trying to create a community where people can kind of bring in, for example, the question on patterns, right? So the common patterns, we're kind of trying to build a community where people can share that information of how they use the tool and the patterns that they discovered and potential ways to kind of remediate it, right? So we're kind of starting out there. So I wouldn't say open source is not kind of not to the extent of right now fully open sourcing all of the tooling pieces, but definitely looking at how do we kind of create a more a model where there's more community contribution sharing to help accelerate this process and to share learnings. So that's definitely a focus area.
Bharat, before we let you go, any nuggets you want to share with our listeners?
No, all I'd say is I think we had this tool out for preview. The reception's been really, really great. So if you haven't heard about it, if you're hearing about it the first time, do definitely go check it out. I think we'll share a link with you. The same with Azure Migrate. If anyone that's involved with migration to Azure or thinking about migration to Azure, you should be looking up Azure Migrate if you're not already familiar with it. So I just want to leave you with those two calls to action. That's about it.
Awesome. I know you did a very awesome demo that featured a certain podcast that we're on right now.
I'm a big fan. I'm excited to show the demo next time with the podcast featuring me. So that's kind of what I'm looking forward to.
Nice, awesome, cool. Kale, any last questions?
No, I just thank you for coming on here and educating our listeners on this product offering. It's exciting. It's cool stuff. It's another tool in our tool belt as we are moving apps to the cloud. So I appreciate all the insight here, and we'll definitely get some links for you to share with our listeners so they can get started with Azure Migrate and this tool.
Awesome. Thank you. And thank you for having me. I'm a big fan, so I'm super excited that I was able to come on the show. So thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.